Welcome to the Frontend Podcast. We explore the ins and outs of life as a developer. We delve into challenging topics around modern-day development and technology, including learning, professional growth, programming languages, frameworks, tools, techniques, UX, UI, careers, and so much more. Welcome, everyone, to episode 3 of season 2. I'm going to lose track of where I am in all the seasons and episodes, but here we are, and we've got the freelancing legend that is Tom Hurst with us today. Based in Yorkshire, just down the road from me. He's enjoyed a successful freelancing career for the past 11 plus years, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, Rob.
It is, mate. Specialising in WordPress development. Tom also runs a mentorship program to help other aspiring freelancers to help get into freelancing life and start their own successful self-employment careers. So, hey, Tom, how's it going?
Hi, Rob. I'm all good, mate.
Yeah, exciting week.
Yeah, exciting, busy, doing a lot of writing at the minute because I'm trying to get the book out. And also, you know, just keeping up with the client work and stuff like that. So it's been a busy one.
Yeah, I think if you're anything like me, I don't think you appreciate kind of how much you've taken on when you saw, because I'm doing a course at the minute, I'm trying to write a course, and you kind of think, yeah, I can find a spare sort of 5 or 6 hours a week, and then or whatever it is, and do a day job and have a kid and all the rest of it, and quickly realize that your ambition has outweighed your talent.
Exactly. It feels like a good idea when you start it, and then you get to a point and you're like, oh shit, this is really happening and I really don't have enough time, but I'm going to have to find it somewhere.
I feel like freelancing is becoming quite the hot topic at the moment, maybe because of COVID and people are getting made redundant, and redundancy for some reason seems to fuel a lot of people's kind of launch into their own self-employment career. But I think more people are looking at it and how they can get into freelancing. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about how you got into it.
So, I mean, my freelancing story is not really that interesting, really, because I don't have, you know, a big work history that led me to freelancing. I just got into it straight away out of university. I did a degree. Well, I went to college first, did some A-levels, went to university, did a degree. Came out of university, and I mean, I'd always wanted to work for myself. So when I applied for my, you know, the first job, I did it a little bit. Let's say I didn't put as much effort into it as what I probably should have to try and get it. I didn't get the job, and I just thought, you know what, I'm going to give this freelancing thing a go. 11 years later, here I am.
Amazing. And yeah, I mean, you've been doing it for over 11 years. That's huge. You know, I mean, what are the secrets of your long reign?
I think hard work and luck both played a part, but I mean, I think that the primary thing is that the business of freelancing is something that's always interested me. I'm from a pretty heavy business background because my dad's an accountant, so I've always had my own like entrepreneurial mindset, and I've always had, you know, his mentorship to guide me, you know, in that side of things. So I think having a strong interest in business, as well as, you know, the web development stuff that I do as a service for freelancing, I think that's really stood me in good stead.
That's got to be super handy, having a father who's an accountant, because I mean, I can't tell you how much I hate accountancy. I don't mind the kind of boring admin things like sending invoices and like doing, like I love organizing things, love it. But like just working out tax, it's just insane.
Yeah, it's a minefield, and having a good accountant, you know, it's so important for freelancers. I always say that, you know, a good accountant will always save you more money than what they cost you. And it's the number one recommended thing that I tell all of the freelancers to do is get that account in place. Luckily for me, mine's free of charge.
Even better. I think it is, though. I mean, you've got to, I mean, if even just from a time point of view, the time that you will save, you know, if you have to spend even something small, like a couple of hours a week doing your books or whatever, you know, I think that's time that you can get back. I mean, that's like a quarter of a day. You know, you could do like literally any other work with it.
Exactly. And you get a better end result as well. You know, it's like when we want people to hire us, you know, because we're professionals and we give good results, better than what they could do with themselves. That's exactly the same thing as us hiring accountants as freelancers, right?
No, absolutely it is, yeah. I mean, how did you get into the WordPress route? Did you kind of, was that something that you niched on straight from the start, or was it kind of just your experience, or?
Yeah, I mean, the final year project that I did for university is kind of where I stumbled on WordPress for the first time. I mean, back when I was about 15 or 16, I did a college course after school on HTML. So I kind of had some web experience anyway. But then obviously fast forward to being 22, doing my last, you know, my final project at university. that was, it was like a multimedia kind of degree. So it wasn't like web heavy, it wasn't programming heavy, but you had a bit of free rein for your final project. And mine was, the brief was to create some kind of marketing material for, you know, an entity of your choice, basically. And I ended up doing my uncle's band's website in WordPress. So, nice. So through, yeah, so Barmy Surplus, the band was called, original. Yeah, I settled on WordPress because that's just where I discovered it. And I just remember following tutorials, how to build my own custom theme and things like that. And then, yeah, I just got super interested in WordPress. I saw that the market was growing exponentially and, you know, there was a big opportunity there to specialize. I found that being too broad, you know, advertising my services just as a web developer, you know, in the general sense, just didn't really get me anywhere. So I thought, I've got this specific knowledge in WordPress. Why not, you know, niche into it and market myself towards these people that need this skill, you know, specifically.
No, absolutely. That sounds like a great idea. I mean, it is one of those, it powers about, you know, something stupid, like nearly 40% of the web is kind of WordPress. You know, if people don't have a WordPress site, they're familiar with it at least.
Yeah. And the thing is, like with WordPress, it gets a bad rap in some circles, but the users love it. Like everyone that I work with, like they'll come to me and they'll say, look, we want to keep our WordPress website. How can we make it better? Or, you know, we want to do, I don't know, some headless WordPress stuff. They actually, the back end of WordPress, they enjoy using, they're familiar with it, all their content's based on it, and they don't really want to move away from it. So I don't really understand why it gets such a bad rap when it serves a really good purpose for a lot of people.
It's almost like, you know, when you get this stereotypical like vicious dog, like a Rottweiler's a vicious dog. And it's like, it's not, it's just normally owned by people who make it a vicious dog. And it just happens to be big.
That's a great analogy.
I do occasionally come up with them. I think WordPress is somehow very similar because it lets you like just install plugins and there's like a plugin for everything. People just like fill it full of plugins, fill it full of really JavaScript heavy themes. And they bog it down and they don't take any security steps. It makes it out the box kind of quite hackable and quite slow and awful. And I think because it makes it so easy for people to do it themselves, they do it themselves. And then it just ends up like some terrible nightmare. But then of course, the reputation spreads that it's like this horrendous burning garbage fire. It's not, it's just misused badly, but it's a tool like anything.
Yeah, exactly. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It gets a bad rap for, you know, from the people that use it badly, not necessarily that it's, you know, across the board, a bad tool, you know, that there's so many successful websites and big websites and enterprise websites using WordPress. So, you know, it can't be all that bad, can it?
Absolutely. Don't Disney use WordPress?
Yeah, I think they do. And some of the big magazines, the tech magazines, is it Verge or one of them, TechCrunch, I think it might be actually. I'm pretty sure that they use WordPress as well.
And well, speaking of big people using WordPress, you've got some impressive clients in your worked with section, including NHS and Facebook and BMW. Do you have like a favorite project or client that you've worked with to date?
I mean, the NHS one was really cool. I worked with like the marketing manager at the Royal Marsden down in London. And we built, it was like an intranet based on WordPress, essentially. It was like a, you know, an internal hub, information hub, you know, and we had, you know, separate sections for kind of like, all, you know, the staff rules and requirements and, you know, information, and like the staff could go in and write their own articles and things like that. And people could comment and converse between each other. So that was a really interesting one to do because, you know, obviously it was for a good cause. And yeah, it was kind of using WordPress in a non-traditional way, which kind of paved the way for the stuff that, you know, I do now and that I want to do in the future.
Oh, awesome. Was it kind of the NHS project maybe that springboarded you into like the like upper echelons or like bigger projects and things like that? Or was it just with it that, like you said, it made you kind of recognize that's the kind of thing I want to aim for?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that one was like a gateway to other bigger jobs. I think the big thing for me was like what you said, you know, secondary. It really highlighted to me what I enjoy doing and what I want to do more of and probably where my skills are, which is in, you know, using WordPress in ways that you might not think of and using it with, you know, coupling it with other tools, which is why I'm trying to get into more headless WordPress stuff right now.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I'll come on to that in a bit, but I had a look at that with Gatsby and things, and it's incredible to just completely separate it out. So you don't have this burning turd of a website that's like all the bloated with plugins and stuff. It just sits there doing its really excellent job of managing content, letting users just put in what they want, and you can put in the advanced custom fields and everything else. And then you just do whatever you want in the front end, completely decoupled. I mean, there's other ways to do it, but I've just done it with Gatsby because it makes it so much easier. And I'm already a React fanboy anyway. So talking about WordPress and the direction it's gone in, it's changed a lot in recent times with the Gutenberg editor and, you know, opening up the REST API, which isn't brand new, but it's kind of one of those, I think it's only now starting to get really a lot more used with this kind of headless and decoupling thing. What are some of your, you know, some of the things on the WordPress roadmap, either present or coming up, that you're quite excited about? Is there anything that gets you pretty fired up about WordPress devin?
Aside from the headless stuff, I mean, to be honest, that's where I'm putting a lot of my attention tech-wise. I mean, Gutenberg, I'm still on the fence about, to be honest, because maybe I'm a traditionalist and I'm used to, you know, the old editor and, you know, extending via ACF custom fields and things like that. But yeah, Gutenberg just feels still a little bit clunky to me. While I am excited about it, I am also wary, because what I do it a lot is transition people from, like, you know, legacy pre-5.0 backends to Gutenberg. And a lot of the time they just don't get it. And it takes a lot of time, I guess, you know, to progress from the old editor to the Gutenberg editor. So while I do think it's, you know, a step in the right direction overall, I think that it's, yeah, proceed with caution kind of thing in terms of developing sites for clients using it.
Yeah, we felt that way. I mean, the first thing I think you get when you've got a set of practices and processes for like developing sites, very good, robust sites in a very efficient manner, is as soon as something massive comes on the horizon, like this tsunami that was like, Gutenberg, everything's different. And you sort of, the initial reaction is to kind of panic, because you're like, oh God, is everything I'm currently doing going to be supported? And it kind of wasn't that bad. But yeah, I know what you mean. It does feel like WordPress sat in a room going, how can we make WordPress a bit more like Wix? And yeah, and I think if you don't have the support for it in the front end, yeah, it ends up being a bit of an interesting thing.
Yeah, I think it was definitely like a marketing move as opposed to a what works now move. Do you know what I mean? It's like, for me, WordPress was kind of, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Like I liked how it was. I thought it worked really well, you know, for the scenarios that I used it for anyway, you know, in terms of custom websites that have got enough control, but not too much, if you get what I'm saying. And I think Gutenberg just kind of opens up a Pandora's box of potential issues for customization and making things look, it just makes it harder really for the devs to put guidelines in place for clients to keep the site looking nice, but be able to manage their own content. Yeah, that's my overriding feeling anyway.
But then I suppose, you know, with the Gatsby stuff, you decouple it. In some respects, it kind of just reads the content out in similar, or my experience of it so far, and I'll admit that's fairly light, but it seems to just read the content out as whatever the content is. So it doesn't seem to worry about it too much. So they can just put whatever they want in the back end and we'll just get it out the front and massage it into the nice, expensive colouring in that we like to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's definitely the way forward, in my opinion, the headless stuff. It just gives you, like you said, that, you know, decoupleization. And yeah, I just think WordPress does backend really well. You know, we all know that there's more modern tools that can give you a better front end than what a WordPress one can be out of the box. Why not use it?
I also noticed on your site that you run a mentorship program and you share. Yeah. I mean, I came across you through our mutual inclusion in the Whiskey Wednesday run by Mark and Scott. But you share a load of valuable advice on social media as well. And I you know, I like that approach because I've always found it to be more helpful to lift people up than to kind of secret everything away. You know, and I've met a lot of those kind of businesses that are like, we've been in business a while, we're not going to help you or share any information, we're going to keep it all secret because like we're afraid of competition. So I think it's really great that someone who has been enjoying a long and successful freelancing career is trying to help other people break into it. Is the mentorship thing like a recent mechanism, or is that something you've been doing for a while?
Yeah, it's pretty recent, to be honest. I would say I started tweeting more about freelancing and my experiences and stuff about 10 months ago, something like that. And people, you know, were saying, oh, this is really, you know, valuable stuff. It's really good insight. And there's not really many people sharing, you know, stories of freelancing as candidly as what you are. And I think that's just part of my nature. I'm a pretty frank and to the point guy. So I think that comes across in the stuff that I share. I don't really tend to go around the houses with stuff. I try and get straight to it. So yeah, I mean, that's where I started thinking, you know what, I think I could try and do this alongside my own web development stuff and try and, you know, write more, share more things, lift more people up, like you said. And I just started to find it a lot more fulfilling than building websites, if I'm honest. And that's just where everything accelerated. It all came from, you know, starting on Twitter. And then I thought, you know, I'd like to go a bit more in depth with, you know, people on a specific level. So that's when I started the mentorship program. And that was in, I think it was in January. I've had students from all over the world, really. I think, you know, from Ukraine, Australia, a few Brits, a few Americans too. And it's just been awesome. I've just really enjoyed it, you know, and it just confirmed that, you know, what you said a few minutes ago, that a lot of people do guard this kind of information, and it's just not in my nature to want to perpetuate that, if you know what I'm saying. I'd rather share what I know, boost people up, and deliver that value that they're not getting from other places. And if I can prevent people from making costly mistakes like what I probably did in my early days, all the better.
No, and I think it's great, because I mean, where else do you get that information from? You've got to get, you know, the tried and tested books on Amazon. But I mean, books and videos and things are great, but they're very much like one-way informational. You know, you can't sort of ask questions of it. Yeah. And like you said, that's one of the biggest problems when people do go freelancing, is that they sort of go, I'm really great at this specific job. But then freelancing, like self-employment, says, here's another 10 jobs that you've never done before, like accounts and sales and marketing. And you're like, you've got to do all them. And there's no one there to really hold your hand. It's just off you go. You tell HMRC, you're self-employed, then it's like, good luck, you're on your own. And like you said, it's very easy to make very costly mistakes. That's fantastic to have like someone like you as a resource. What sort of successes have you had with your students?
So, I mean, a lot of the time it's been confidence-based, really. Just trying to teach people and convey to them that perhaps that they're worth more than what they're selling their services for, in terms of, you know, not just financially, but how they're treated with their clients and things like that. I mean, that's something that really got me in my early career, you know, confidence. It hindered me so much, not just the imposter syndrome per se, but just general confidence, you know, in doing all those things that you just mentioned. You know, I knew that I could develop websites, but selling, you know, my services, marketing myself, having the confidence to do that effectively, that's something that genuinely held me back probably for a couple of years, I would say. You know, I know that I would have been further ahead quicker if I would have had that confidence or someone to lean on, you know, that could just boost me up that little bit. And I think that that's been one of the biggest successes about the, you know, the freelancing mentorship and sharing my freelancing insights in general.
Now, we'd be remiss if we didn't try and pump you for a little bit more of your awesome knowledge around the freelancing game. So what advice would you give to people looking to either start their business or break away from their day job and transition into freelancing, apart from hiring you as a mentor, obviously?
Well, yeah, you can do that if you want, but, you know. Yeah, so to get into freelancing, I mean, there's two ways, really. You've either got a job already and, you know, you've got a skill that you can sell as a freelancer, or you just want to jump straight into it. And obviously, that's what I did, jump straight into it. But I would say that route's a lot harder.
I think a lot of people are probably sat there in a job thinking, I want to do it for myself. So, yeah, I'd probably go from that angle.
So, I mean, I did a little a tweet on this, actually, the other day. So I've got a few steps. So yeah, I mean, my number one piece of advice would be to build your own audience, you know, your own client base, prospect base that would potentially hire someone with your services, because a lot of people end up going, you know, to Upwork and Fiverr and just getting lost in a race to the bottom. And you once you're in that race to the bottom, you know, there's always going to be someone cheaper than you, so it's never ending. And it just does you no favors. The first thing that I'd do, even if I had a job, would be to say, look, tell all your friends and family that you're thinking about going freelance, because you'd be surprised about the people that you already know that could use your services. So yeah, I mean, that's the first step that I would take, is, you know, build that audience, look at your local connections. And then after that, I would probably think, what's the skill that I do best? You know, what's the one that I do best over all the potential other skills that I have? Because that's another common mistake that freelancers make. So they'll say, oh, I can do web design, I can do web development, I can do X, I can do Y, I can do Z. I can even, you know, write all your content for you. I can even take the photos. When you sell yourself as a jack of all trades, you're never going to look like the expert across them all. Pick one service and one type of like client that you want to target, and make connections in that area alongside working at the same time. Once you've identified what service that you want to provide and what clients that you want to work with, you can start following those people on social media and getting your content under their noses. This is something that I tried to do with the headless WordPress stuff. I wrote this article and I started talking to people on LinkedIn that I knew were WordPress users but weren't necessarily aware of the benefits of headless WordPress. So yeah, I got this article under their noses and they're like, oh, this, you know, I've never seen it explained in these terms before. I understand what it is. And I ended up getting, you know, a couple of solid leads from that. But the main takeaway is build the audience of potential clients while you've still got your job. It's hard work, but it's doable.
I think as well, I'd probably say don't expect overnight success.
Exactly.
The thing is, well, it's that social media iceberg thing, isn't it? Where like there's far too many people going, yeah, I make like 6 or 7 figures doing freelance stuff. You're like, not from last week, you didn't though. You're really successful, but it's like you're 11 years in. You know, like after your second month, you weren't like, sweet, where's the keys to my Bentley?
Yeah, and that's important to convey as well. Like all the advice that I give, I always, you know, try and caveat it with, you know, I've been doing it a long time. Freelancing is certainly not the easy route. It's hard work. It will take time, you know, and you're not going to be driving a Tesla or a Bentley or Ferrari or whatever you want, you know, in a couple of weeks. It's going to take years, and that's just the reality. But if you do things consistently and you do it well and you produce quality work and you have confidence in your own abilities and you can sell your own services and stuff like that, then it's possible to make a really good living from freelancing.
There's someone out there just starting their freelance career who's like flipping through a Tesla brochure going, shit. Tom said, I'm looking at this too early.
Look, there'll always be an outlier, you know, there'll always be someone that lands an 100 grand project, you know, in week two. But the reality is it's probably not going to happen to you. So, you know, maybe a secondhand Fiesta might be a good place to start.
Get a Fiesta, start doing WordPress. Good times.
Yeah.
What sort of red flags should they watch out for? Because that's another key thing, I think. You know, it's all good and well having the good sides, but what kind of red flags should they stay away from when they do start getting an influx of clients?
Yeah, I mean, the main one for me is anyone that wants like cheap work, fast work, you know, and a combination of both, and just start running. Because when someone doesn't understand your value on an individual basis that you can provide them, you know, compared to any other service provider, then you're just going to get treated like shit, really. When someone gets in touch to inquire about your freelance services and the first thing that they're obviously concerned about is price, that's a massive red flag, because they literally just want to get from A to B as cheaply as possible. They don't care how good the job is. They've just got no concept of how one individual freelancer could potentially provide them a better service than another. Start running. If people just want to know how cheap you are, then start running.
Conversely, you've got to talk about price early as well. I read one of your recent articles on the site while I was just doing a bit of like research for questions, and it was really good about getting to the point of kind of price very quickly. Because it seems really, I think especially being British, you know, we have that kind of like, oh, can't talk about price and money, but it's waste everyone's time if you don't. In the nicest possible way, if someone comes along and says, I've got like £100 and I want a WordPress website, it's just not going to happen, because you're like, the hosting alone for like a decent site won't be covered by that money, let alone, you know, meetings that you're going to want to have and then design work and everything else. It's physically not going to happen. So, you know, by having several meetings and kind of entertaining, spending hours of your time to get to a point where like, I can't physically do it, you've wasted your time, you've wasted their time that they could have been doing something else. So I think, you know, it doesn't have to be your opening question. Like, hey, can I talk to you about WordPress site? What money you got? But I think it needs early on in the discussion of like, look, what budget range are we looking for? And then kind of trying to marry that up to, well, what do you want for that budget?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, like that is probably one of my first questions, because I think the quicker that you can qualify a lead, you're doing both sides of the engagement a favor. You know, you're doing the client a favor, like you said, you're saving them time, and you're doing yourself a favor as well, because you can move on to more suitable leads, you know. So yeah, I know what you're saying. You don't want to come across as abrupt and just money orientated yourself, but it is a highly important question to ask pretty early on. I think I did a tweet not long ago where I was like, you could qualify a lead in 3 questions. And you know what, the first one is obviously find out why they want to work with you as an individual. You know, do they see your specific value compared to any other freelancer out there? And I think question 2 was, yeah, you know, just giving like putting an anchor really of what your pricing structure kind of is in their mind, and just by gauging their response, whether that's actually viable whatsoever. Because if you say, look, my projects start at $5,000 and they often exceed 10, then that's going to, it's not coming across abrupt. It's just being honest, and it's going to filter the leads through and just get the people that, you know, can afford you, I guess, through that qualification process.
Plus, it's easy to position if you kind of do it in a rather than a direct, like, you know, what's your budget kind of question, because some people don't know. But if you phrase it in more of a like, well, given what you said you're looking for, this is a similar project that I can show you, which helps sell you as well. And you can say, well, this project was around this kind of ballpark. And then they can go, oh, and then they'll either have to change their budget to fit that, or they'll have to kind of rethink their scope. You know, it's like, no, you can't have a multi-language, multi-currency e-commerce site for like £1,000. It's not gonna, it's, again, it just can't work.
Yeah, you just touched on something there that's that rings a bell with me. Like, when, you know, if you're going to reduce your price, you've got to reduce scope. So like what you said then, you know, if someone's wanting all the bells and whistles e-commerce site and they've got, you know, I don't know, £100, it just, that obviously can't happen. But then you might get conversely someone who, they don't necessarily know what they want, but they think they want everything, but then they've got the budget of having half of that. So that's one trap that freelancers fall into, is that they, to get the project over the line, they say that they promise the world for the, you know, a modest budget, when really, you know, if you're taking away from price, you need to take away from features as well.
I think I touched on this on our Whiskey Wednesday, and we used to price projects. We'd kind of break the estimate down into kind of either phases or kind of groups of features. So like, well, this is your basic kind of marketing site, and then this might be, I don't know, you want like a Wizard of Form or something to do something with, or you want like a membership size. This membership thing can be a relatively separate entity, and this is going to be around this much. So it might be that you have part of what you want for, you know, a price that more kind of suits your budget, but then this extra stuff you could either maybe work it in later as a different phase given the success of the first one, or it just gives you some kind of options to work with. But like you said, also whilst avoiding that kind of sneaking of the scope where you just sort of end up doing it anywhere. But
yeah,
that's not what you want.
Exactly.
Now, one thing that doesn't get talked about a lot as well with the kind of self-employment route is keeping your skills up to date, because with a quote unquote proper job, you often get training of some kind or access to it, whether that's maybe like a Pluralsight subscription or time off to actually, you know, paid time off to go and do the learning, or even it's just other people who are better than you in the job that can pull you along. But when you're on your own, you are literally making all the decisions. So what do you do in terms of professional development to keep your skills sharp, especially when, you know, there's the time is money thing? So anything you're doing, whilst it could be seen as an investment for the future, anything you're doing learning is not kind of directly bringing money in. So how do you handle it?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I handle that is I prioritize jobs that allow me to learn on them. So I get paid to learn. That's how I do it.
Oh, that's genius.
I can remember when React was like first, well, it probably wasn't even first coming out, but it was first becoming evident that you would have to know React to make Gutenberg blocks. So I ended up working with a client, and I kind of engineered a situation where I would learn React, you know, so that I could build blocks for their clients. That's how I deal with the professional development thing. Get paid to learn wherever you can. Give priority to those projects.
That is a crafty method that I've never even thought of.
Yeah, I mean, it's not disingenuous really, because
no.
Obviously, I know what you're saying, like it's a smart way to do it really for the freelancer, but also if you're working with a client that you've worked with for a long time and you feel that you could learn this skill and then, you know, add to their chops, because no one else really was suggesting that they take this path. So, you know, I would kind of put myself forward to help them as well. So it worked well for both parties.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, sounds good. I think that's come to the end of my questions. The bit I ask at the end of every podcast episode is, do you have anything you want to mention, plug, link to, anything like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the minute, I'm in the middle of finishing my second book. I released a free one in April called 10 Steps to Being a Better Freelancer. That was the first one, and it went really well. It was really well received. And then I started talking more about pricing on Twitter, and everyone started getting interested about that. So I dropped everything that I was doing basically and just decided to write this book in a month. So yeah, I'm writing that one right now. So the link for that's in my Twitter bio. So you can get me on Twitter @Tom_Hurst. And if you want to find me online or read a bit more about me, you can go to tomhurst.com.
Oh, look at that. You've saved me the job of actually having to say these things out loud. That's great.
Oh, sorry, mate.
Oh, no. Saves me a job. Saves my voice. I don't do a lot of talking during the day. I've been a remotee, so voice goes downhill quickly. No, that's great. And I'll link to all these things in the show notes so that people can access them, you know, directly from anywhere. But yeah, go and check Tom out on Twitter. He's always posting valuable advice, and that book looks really awesome. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm sure we'll see you about the Twitterverse.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Rob. It's been fun.
So that's it for another great episode. Do consider subscribing if you like what you hear. Give us a like or share on social media. Speaking of which, if you want to follow the show, we're available on Twitter at Front End Podcast. You can follow me, Rob Kendall, on Twitter too, at Kendall Mint Code. If you'd like to find out more about the show, sponsor an episode, or be a guest, you can find out more on our dedicated website, thefrontendpodcast.site.